Welcome to the Doghouse on NTNRadio.com.
It's so hot in here, I was trying to leave the rack off to the last minute.
It is. It is hot in here. So I got a problem with my news potentially this week, Phil.
That you had to do it 2 weeks in a row? No,
well, I do have a problem with that. That's a whole different thing. Warren will pay for that. No, I actually just opened up my...
Crashed out?
I opened my news file and there was nothing in it.
Well, Warren's news.
I have a backup. I always have a backup plan. So
that was funny.
What did you have going on this weekend?
Well, I had a lot of legal stuff. Oh, let me start with this.
This makes it sound like you're in trouble.
I kind of am. I'm in trouble with the listeners.
Okay.
Apparently last week after the show ended, I left the mics on they were still on when I came in this morning.
You left the mics on, but you have control over the recording. Did you didn't edit it out?
I forgot the end of the show to fix. So there might have been an F word, and there might have been some
S-words. I know there were a couple swear words that you missed.
Yeah, but there was apparently more if you listened all the way to the end. Sorry about that. Not really. I was mad.
Well, did you fix it?
No, because by the time I found out, I figured everybody and their brother had it.
You might want to fix it before iTunes finds it out.
Oh. You should do that tonight.
How can I do that?
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well,
All right. Let me write myself a note on that.
Okay. All right.
I don't really care about iTunes because that's Apple and they support terrorism.
Well, I'm not a big Apple fan, but I do know that a lot of people do. It's the largest marketplace on the planet for our data.
Fix last week. Although I did get a lot of Cheerios and Rice Krispies about that.
Why?
Why? Because people are mad.
Not
so,
why.
So then let me tell you about the rest of my weekend. Okay. I had a lot of legal documents to shuffle through because just apparently a lot of legal things are going on in my life right now. Mm-hmm. Don't really care. Everything's good. I'm not going to jail again or more or anything like
this
that.
This week.
But then I sat down and I was like, I'm going to watch me some racing. You know what I did? I turned on the television. Supercross. How many people did Supercross screw up this week by Supercross not being on Fox Sports 1? It was on regular Fox.
Right.
And it was on at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known that because I watch it on demand. So.
Right. Well, I don't.
Okay.
So I usually watch it live, but I also had to tell a bunch of people that.
All right. Phil, are you playing with a selfie stick?
Yeah, I'm going to take a selfie during the show today, I think.
Okay.
then I was also, I watched on television, right? I got to watch Supercross. Very much happy.
Okay.
Then I got to watch World Superbike, right? Again, very much happy.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, somebody was nice enough to give me their... Dish Network password so I could watch Moto America because I keep hearing they're having these races.
Right.
And then I find out that they don't have them on demand, so you can't even watch them on demand on Bean.
That is true.
So I'm going to punt on Moto America. Since they don't want me watching it, I don't think I should talk about it. Because why? If you're doing everything you can to keep it away from people to watch it, why should we talk about
it? Because I don't think they're doing that. I don't think they're doing that. Now, you can make an argument that they're screwing up, okay? And that's a valid argument. But they don't want people not to watch it.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
Because it's not even on demand. And Bean doesn't have it on their own demand site.
Okay. Okay, that's a screw-up, in my opinion. I don't believe that's the plan, okay? I just don't believe that's the plan.
Okay, they don't want people to see it. Listen, I'd much rather think they didn't want me to watch it than they were stupid enough not to read their contract.
I remember the early days of AMA Superbike back in the early 2000s, and I remember how horrible some of the stuff was and all the mistakes that got made. So I think you got to realize this series is 1 year old, and they're going to make a lot more mistakes before they get things down pat. And I think they just made some mistakes. And I think they're going to get some growing pains. They're going to lose some fans because of it. But, you know, it's the National Series, and I think we have to support it.
Yeah, I just don't think they want us to.
Well, you're basing that on bad decisions that they made, that they don't want to because they made some bad decisions.
Isn't that usually what you base those kind of things
on? No, sometimes, I hate to say this, but sometimes it comes down to people being incompetent. Sometimes it comes down to people screwing up. Sometimes it comes down to hiring the wrong people. I've hired the wrong people before and had to address it. It happens at times. That doesn't mean you had bad intentions. You made a mistake. You screw up. When you're starting a new series, you're going to make some mistakes along the way, and you learn, you know? So
I guess. I don't know.
I'm really
bitter because we're two rounds in. We got a third round coming up, and I haven't seen a race.
Well, I do not believe that Wayne Rainey wants people not to watch the races.
Well, then why?
That's his goal, Wayne Rainey's goal, is he wants to get as much exposure to the series so that Americans can actually once again start to make an impact on the world scene. Right?
Yeah, but that's not.
But that doesn't
happen.
Mean he didn't hire somebody that screwed up. I think, you know, I think the fact that you can't watch the races on demand right now is a real bad thing, and hopefully they'll fix it. Hopefully it'll get fixed.
I hope so. Because I don't get to watch nothing anymore.
And you get to watch yourself apparently because he's playing with his selfie
stick.
Yeah,
I promised I would take some selfies this week because apparently when I'm angry, people want to see what it looks like. Although I worry,
it looks pretty much the same.
I'm not
really
that angry.
His mouth is open wider.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
But I just am a little. I don't know. I'm disheartened by everything that's going on.
I'm frustrated by it, too, but I'm not going to give up yet because I think they'll get this stuff straightened out. And also, I feel an obligation to support the National Series through their screw-ups.
You know,
it puts us at a disadvantage in being able to talk about the races when we can't watch them because we don't have access to be in sports. But,
and it's,
you know, next year it might be.
Like, all right, that, you know what? I can't watch MotoGP or World Superbike on beIN Sports at home, but at least I can buy the package. And it's not about money. Right. I signed up for MotorTrend on demand for $5 a month or whatever the hell it was.
Right.
It wasn't about money.
Right.
It's about the fact that I signed up for it and then they yanked it.
Yeah.
And now it's on someplace that if you don't have beIN as your service provider, you can't watch.
Right.
And you have to watch it live. I can't watch it after the fact.
Right. I don't know how many people get beIN Sports, but
it's only available in 14.6 of the houses in the United States. Available. That means it's on their list that they can order. So it's probably under 7% of the country.
Okay.
And most of those people are soccer people.
Well, they are. That's that beIN Sports.
Because it's a soccer network.
That's what they were built around, right? Be soccer. And Al Jazeera.
You know, so it's frustrating.
I think they thought they were doing the best thing because they wanted the sport to be on the same place that World Superbike and MotoGP.
And I can see that.
Right.
But the problem is that they should have done some research and said, wow, not that many Americans do it. So, not that many people can. It's your home country. It's not like it's only on 7% of the televisions in Europe. This is here.
Right. No, I hear you. It's a bad choice.
You know, so it's got to be on demand. It has to be. I don't care if you put it on YouTube on Tuesday morning.
Right.
I'll push the show back to Thursday if it doesn't show up till Wednesday. But the fact that I can't even go back and watch what happened at COTA, I'll never see what happened at Atlanta, and I'm not going to be able to watch VIR. And then the other thing is, I live in damn Virginia, Virginia International Raceway, and I haven't seen an ad for it, yet I keep getting hit for ads for New Jersey. Nobody wants to go to New Jersey. They're doing a lot of screw-ups there.
Yeah, I think they are. I think they're screwing up. They're going through some growing pains right now, and I guess they figured that having any television package was better than none. I think in this case, that's not true, but they're going to learn that themselves. I imagine that.
I just hope it doesn't cost us the sport.
I don't think it'll cost them the sport, but I think what it'll do is they're going to get a lot of angry fans because of this.
They're going to get, you know what? They're going to get a lot of empty places. And from the few photos I saw from Atlanta, it was empty.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen them, but, you know, they'll learn. They will learn. You know,
I mean, hell, I can watch Azra online.
Right. They'll learn. And hopefully they'll show up on demand. And if there's a way to get it,
if you're watching it on demand somewhere, I'm serious. Right. Email me, phil@ntnradio.com. Right. Let me know where.
Right, right. And if you're able to figure out how to get it from, you know, from the beIN Sports website or beIN Sports Connect or whatever, I couldn't find that.
I couldn't find it either.
All I could find on there was like the last lap of each of the races.
And I don't care about the last lap.
No, I mean, I wondered how it got to the point that, you know, and we know some of the things that happened because I did read what happened.
I've kind of punted on it. I'm just, it's like, Jesus, it's 2016, people.
I'm not going to punt on it because I think they'll grow out of this.
And I hope so.
I think these mistakes will, they're going to get reminded about it all the time.
They don't seem to care because when I've said stuff
I think they do. I absolutely does. Wayne Rainey's a bright guy. He does not want to tick off his fans. He's going to be smart about it, and he's probably getting an ass whipping right now about this, and he's probably not happening. There are probably going to be some people get fired.
You know
over
what I was really surprised at, and I cannot believe I'm going to say this, but I was really shocked at how much Road Racing World is supporting this. And how they said nothing. RoadRacingWorld.com is absolutely quiet about the fact that you can't watch it on demand, that if you don't have Bean, you can't watch it, and that it was promised to be on Motor Trend, and they had the announcement on there, too, about it being on Motor Trend, and then last minute gets yanked and not a word. And that shocked me. They're usually pretty straight shooters.
I'm not. But we don't know what they've said behind the scenes to the heads, down there, and the people that are part of the Crave Group.
Yeah, it should be the Grave Group at this rate, because that's where they're going to send the.
It's early, Phil. They're not going to fail over this mistake, even if they go the rest of the season without having on demand. That's not going to do it. But they have to get exposure for their sponsors to be happy.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm worried about. Right. And is, Elena Meyer lost a ride because she didn't have any sponsors. Mm-hmm. You're going to have people go there and they're going to be like, oh, hey, what are you on? Oh, we're on Bean. And they're going to be like, oh, so you five people watch you a weekend?
Well, I mean, like I said, I'm going to be supportive of them because I'm hoping they're going to grow out of these growing pains. And
normally, you're
and
the
I'm hoping somewhere
person.
Down. Yeah, but I mean, I want to support the National Series.
I do too.
I mean, I had to swallow hard to support the National Series when it was under DMG.
But, no, we all did.
Right. But we did. Because
I just didn't realize DMG provided better coverage than Crave is.
Well, that's.
I'd rather them put it back on Fans Choice.
Oh, I agree.
At least it was there all the time.
No, I agree. I agree. I think it's a screw up.
We should go to break. Stop pitching.
We will. When we get back, actually, it was funny, Phil, because you sent me a story last week. This past week, you sent me a story literally. I got it within 5 minutes of when I had read the story, and it was like, what are we both looking at? The same news feed?
Porn?
No, not porn.
Wasn't that story?
Not porn, but it actually has something to do with Phil's neighbors.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does. You know, one of the staples of the doghouse, and certainly in the early years, was stories about animals and people.
Man versus people. Man versus motorcycles versus animals.
Motorcycle versus
people.
We had some of our best. We have not had a lot of them in recent years.
We had the elephant. We had the water buffalo.
We had the water buffalo. It was my favorite. I think my all-time favorite story is the water buffalo.
Yeah.
And why riding without a helmet is not a good thing.
Yeah.
And over the years, I had a couple. I've had some stories with turkeys, and I actually had a story with frozen turkeys. Do you remember the frozen turkey
story? Yes, I remember the frozen turkey story.
Yeah. Well, this week, Phil and me both came across the same story at right about the same time about a Minneapolis man who was riding a motorcycle, and a turkey flew across the road and struck him in the face.
Yeah.
That had to really not be pleasant.
No. Turkeys can be big.
They can be big. I mean, at least at my dinner table, they show up. They're pretty big, right?
Yeah, 18, 21 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that coming across.
Wild ones are a little smaller.
That hitting you in the face is not going to be fun.
At first, it said wild turkey hits a rider in the face. I thought somebody threw a bottle at
him. Yeah, really.
I was like, damn.
The rider, a guy named Brian Huffman from Lake City, Minnesota, was riding northbound on Highway 35. Pretty big road. Actually been on that road before. Yep. On his Harley when the turkey hit him in the head. And when that happened, I guess he was a little stunned, and he ran into the back of a Subaru Outback. Oh, I'm sorry, the front of a Subaru Outback. Yeah, going in the opposite direction. And he ended up being medevaced to Red Wings Hospital with undetermined injuries and a mouthful of feathers.
Yeah, right. And they gave him gravy to make it all better.
No mention about whether or not the bird became dinner.
Well, I hope so.
I would hope so, too.
I mean, if a turkey hits me, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, and I imagine, he probably wasn't even thinking about it at the time. No. He was probably like, if he hit a car head on and he got hit in the face by a 20-pound or 25 or 30-pound turkey.
Even a 10-pound turkey.
Even a 10-pound turkey.
That's a headshot.
At highway speed, yeah.
Yep.
So, he probably wasn't too concerned about that. So, and depending on the speed he was going, that turkey might have exploded on contact anyway.
So, yeah, that's true, too.
Wouldn't have been good.
Is there a helmet law there?
In Minnesota?
I hope
that's
so.
That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Yeah, I actually think if he wasn't wearing a helmet, the turkey hitting you in the head would probably kill you.
Yeah.
When you think?
I think so.
Yeah, I do, too.
Deliciously killed you, but... Sorry.
It's not deep fried, Phil. Okay? It was a raw turkey. Not so delicious.
That's not so delicious. That's salmonella.
Yeah, right. So, anyway, I came across a story... that I thought was really unique. There's a company out there who has, I think, revolutionized the front suspension on motorcycles. The most common suspension on motorcycles is the fork suspension, right? With forks and the triple trees. And, you know, basically the forks flex under changing road conditions, bumps and things of that nature like that. And that gets all transmitted up to the triple tree, which has to be a pretty bulky thing in order to be able to take that because it takes a lot of pressure. And, you know, even with things like clip-ons and everything, you still have that same architecture where you have the triple clamps and the forks. There have been a number of other front-end designs over the years, but nothing has ever really had a substantial improvement around the problems that telescopic forks have. This group, who they're an Australian group, and they call themselves Moto Eno.
Moto Eno.
They have designed a complete motorcycle frame that can be used with pretty much any motor around this front suspension that they designed. The interesting thing of it, and there's pictures of it, there's a video of it in this week's post, and the front end operates as a parallelogram. And when you look at it, you'll say, well, I've seen a front end like that before. You haven't really. Look closely at the video because not only does the triangle that holds the wheel on operate in a scissors motion like you see, but actually the steering is done through a center hub mechanism, and it's just fascinating to look at. I don't even know how anybody comes up with something. People come up with brilliant ideas to me, just kind of blow me away. But the layout of the front suspension actually keeps the wheel at a constant angle at all times. And
That's kind of interesting.
It is very interesting, and especially if you watch, they had a couple other videos I didn't put into this week's post, which actually shows close up of a guy on there and just flexing the front end and also steering the front end and then steering and flexing the front end. You look at it and it is like nothing I have ever seen. Basically the structure of, you look at it, is there's a triangle that holds the wheel on. There's two more arms from the top and the bottom that to the triangle that go straight back to pivot points at the top and the bottom of the frame. And that provides direct brace against braking forces. There is no triple clamp. There's no forks. Okay, it's just this parallelogram. Steering of the front end is really weird, but it's sort of interesting if you look at it, because what happens is the Moto Eno design tilts the forward beam of the wheel holding triangle to steer the wheel. So it actually it's almost hard to explain it without actually looking at it.
You know, I'm watching the video. I pulled the thing up out of the post.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
It is bizarre, and
I mean, I can see conceptually how it works.
Mm-hmm. It's not simple. It's a pretty complex design.
It's really complex, but right. It also looks lighter than the bulky triple
tree.
It is.
It's much it's much lighter, and basically the handlebars connect to the steering mechanism by a simple pair of scissors links that isolate the suspension action from the handlebars itself. So none of the suspension travel is transmitted up through the handlebars. And again, you got to look at the... Please go to ntnradio.com. Look at this week's post, because they'll make no sense of the story without doing that.
And it looks... Okay, it looks really sci-fi badass.
It does, doesn't it?
like I'm not a sport bike guy, mm-hmm. but if I saw a front end, I mean, it looks like somebody took an Erector set and built a bike out.
Right. And
it's pretty cool.
And it's not just the front end, but the whole frame is sort of built around that. But it's got some really cool things in there. Like you can tune the rake and trail on the bike, you know, without making any actual changes in the suspension at all. You can dial in whatever degree of brake dive you want, including no brake dive at all, which is just hard to imagine. Or you can even have what they call reverse brake drive, where the front end actually lifts under braking if you're, like, extremely brave or you're Crazy Joe Iannone. Right. But
if you want to wipe out your teammate. Yeah,
right, exactly. You can sort of think of the overall system as kind of like a McPherson strut suspension on a car.
Yeah.
So here's what you got. You got a very direct connection between the steering and the front axle. You got excellent braking force management, because all the braking forces go through the frame, not up through the triple clamp or the triple tree. You got total control over the brake dive without affecting the steering geometry at all. Even if you dial in some brake dive, now on a normal sport bike, the minute you start to get compression of the front suspension under braking, known as brake dive, in there, the geometry of the suspension changes. On this, doesn't change at all. Doesn't really matter whether you have tons of brake dive or none at all. It has virtually minimal sideways flex, and it's got zero front to back flex. There's no large swing arm that may drag on the ground. So if you've seen a lot of these people... I'm trying to think. Bimoto, I think, is one of them that has a swing arm front end. And the problem with those is that they will, when you lean those over, they can actually drag on the ground, which bad things happen when that happens in there. So this one doesn't have that problem. And the total frame and suspension system actually comes out lighter than any forked bike out there, because it doesn't need a massively reinforced steering system. All the stuff that we have up in the triple tree, which is, adds to a lot of weight. The whole steering head on a motorcycle, including the triple clamps and all that stuff up there, it's a significant amount of weight. And
for you Harley riders, it looks like it's all chrome.
It does look like that, right.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's got a really wide steering lock. It allows you to take very tight U-turns. Isle of Man champion Cameron Donald actually had some track time with the Moto Ena suspension and said the bike amazingly feels quite conventional in the way that it handles on the track, which is the biggest surprise to me. It is not what you'd expect, because it certainly doesn't look conventional. The way it turns into the corners and the way it has some dive under brakes and whatnot is actually very similar to a conventional fork motorcycle. But what I saw as the big positive of this was the way I could trail brake into the corners and hold a very tight line. You still have got an amount of dive, which apparently can be tuned out, the way that they had it set up when I rode it, but you can trail brake into the corner well past where you would normally do so on a conventional bike, and with a lot more brake pressure. A race bike's the next step to take it to the next level and push it harder and see how it responds. Like all bikes, the harder you push them, the more you learn about them. In cases where testers have had enough time and laps to start extracting the most in the system, the Moto Eno team claims the bike's deep braking chops and handling attitude have given it an advantage up to a whole second per corner.
Whoa.
With the same rider, not per lap, per corner.
Wow.
According to the telemetry, the cornering line is totally different. It brakes ridiculously deep into a corner while banked over. You don't brake hard when you're banked over, but you can do it with this bike. And the team says the bike turns tighter for a given lean angle than a regular bike as well. Now, even a couple, as we've seen from watching races,
a hundredth of a second a corner.
I would say a couple of tenths of seconds per corner would be absolutely massive, right?
Right. I mean, that's the difference between winning by 10 seconds and winning by 4 weeks.
Yeah. And the Moto Uno team is so confident in their design that they're taking it straight to the top levels of competition. The current Moto Uno bike is about a $300,000 Aussie prototype built around a 1993 Ducati Sport 900.
Oh, so it's going to come seventh.
You're right. The team is arranging financing and tooling up to build a Moto Uno frame around a Honda CBR 600 engine, and the whole thing is going to be going into racing in Moto 2 later this season. They're just going to wild card it into several races this season.
I'm excited to watch for that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be cool. The suspension system is designed such that most of it can be built in carbon fiber to reduce weight even further. The Moto Uno team has a promising young rider lined up for Moto 2. They're getting close to financing being in place, and they've already got their hands on a Honda Prep Moto 2 engine and other parts ready to go, and they're very confident that they can make a splash and perhaps even take home some silverware in a racing category where engines, tires, and electronics are standardized and chassis design can really shine, and that's the case.
Imagine this just comes out and spanks ass in its first Moto 2 race.
It'd be unbelievable.
A second a corner?
It's unbelievable.
That's not even fathomable in my mind.
Right. I mean, that, 16-corner track, you can have 16-second advantage on that track?
I mean, A, that's going to shatter track records.
Oh, yeah, you just dust everybody off.
But B, you're going to lap the field.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They say initial plans are to enter just two or three Moto 2 races later this season, but the ultimate goal for Moto Uno is twofold. First, they want to license suspension technology to volume manufacturers, and second, they want to manufacture their own high-end boutique superbikes built around the Ducati Testarossa 1200 motor out of the current Multistrada. So,
well, good for them.
Right.
I mean, that looks pretty awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. You have to go look at the video. Please go look at the video in this week's post, and you should get there anywhere. And make sure you check out, if you like listening to Phil and Me, which I know is not many of you, but if you like listening to Phil and Me, please check out our other show. You heard it here. It's also on ntnradio.com. We would appreciate it. Spread the word. Let people know about it. If you like it, tell people. If you don't like it, tell us. All right. We'll be back on the other side of the break. Welcome back. I had some technical difficulties this week, which
didn't we all
caused me to lose some of my material, my stories, but I actually did find it online. And if you look at in this week's post, you'll actually see a picture of a bike called the Magpul Ronin 1125R.
It goes on our topic of freaky bikes this week.
Whenever I come across what I think is a cool looking bike, I always that kind of focus in on the story. But
you know what you should do? You should put it out on Facebook before we do the show.
Yeah, yes. That's a good point. Sorry, Warren. Phil wanted to get a dig in. So, anyway.
I had to do the dig.
Okay. But interestingly enough, this bike is actually, if you're not familiar, you say, who the hell is this, right? Well, Magpul is a firearm manufacturer.
Right.
And so most people were thinking, what's that all about? But two of the executives of Magpul decided that they wanted to do something in the motorcycle industry. And back in 2009, when Harley pulled the plug on Buell, there were a bunch of unsold Buell bikes that were sitting around the Buell dealership, some in warehouses, most not assembled, not completely assembled in their crates. So they formed Ronin Motor Works, and they went out and purchased a bunch of these 1125R. They purchased some other ones too, but they ended up settling on the Buell 1125Rs. And they decided what they were going to do was, rather than just kind of like tune the bike up, that they were going to actually try and take these bikes and make genuinely all-new bikes out of them. And, you know, one of the things that firearm manufacturers have is real good engineering capabilities. You can't be a good firearm manufacturer if you don't have good engineering capabilities. Right. So it's kind of natural, in my mind, for them to go into building a motorcycle, because that's an engineering endeavor. And the only bits that carried over from the original Buell are portions of the frame, the engine, the brakes, and the wheels. And so they kind of started with that.
I mean, that's kind of a lot, though.
No, a portion. I mean, you got to understand, on a sport bike, you have the frame, you have the subframe, and wheels are nothing, right? You know,
they're kind of important, Ken.
So on a Buell, if you take the frame and you eliminate the subframe, you take the engine, it's not much. So, but what they built was what is a pretty sinister looking bike, I think. Don't you think so, Phil?
It's definitely got
that hunched over kind of look to it.
You know, when you see a side view of it, it kind of looks like the front is like a helmet, like a gladiator's helmet.
It does look that way. You're right. You're right.
So it's kind of like cool.
Yeah, and it's what they did was the radiator on the motorcycle actually is like a prominent place right up where normally you would see the headlight. And instead, they have the headlights to the side of the radiator, and they're vertically mounted headlights. If you look at the front-on picture of it, of the bike, you know. And I don't have that. I put only one picture in this week's post, but so you can go out there and you can Google the Ronin 1125R or Magpul Ronin, and you will find it up there. But
it's wild looking.
It is a very wild looking bike. There's some videos out there of it as well. There's a bunch of artist conceptions of some changes, you know, if they did different things to it. But anyway, so it's got the Buell Rotax V-twin engine in there, but it was thoroughly retuned to provide a balance of power and rideability. They added in a air ram intake. And
you know, part of me says I kind of wish that next time Eric Buell comes out with a bike, he did something like this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where it was like, hey, yeah.
Right. Oh, you know, Buell does have a lot of really cool technology he adds into his bikes here, but this was more of a design, kind of a unique looking thing to it. The bike is actually considerably lighter. It doesn't look like it would be lighter. It's about 54 pounds lighter.
Really?
Than the original Buell. And
I would have thought it was heavier.
A lot of that heft comes from shedding the original fairing and the body cladding that's on the bike, because it is pretty much a naked design. And they did build a new subframe for the back with a monoshock setup. And even the wiring system they completely redid.
It'd be nice if somewhere there was like a holster for your gun or...
It is that kind of looking bike, isn't it? You know,
hey, there's a zombie apocalypse coming. Yeah, I want one of these. Yeah.
So if you wonder where the name comes, it actually comes from... a story called "Revenge of the 47 Ronin," and it's a story of 47 warriors that avenge the death of their master.
Japanese movie.
Yeah, Japanese movie.
Hero.
A total of 47, and go along with that, a total of 47 Ronin bikes were built, each with their own unique name, number, and name. And 2 years after production began.
So I'm totally buying one. I want to own the Chin Lee bike. Chin Lee.
Yeah, right. There's only 17 left. As you can imagine, they're not cheap. The first series of seven came out, retailed for about $38,000. And the price goes up as exclusivity grows, like everything else. The more exclusive it is, the more you pay for it. And there are only three bikes from the final series, which is why I think the story, you know, claiming how rare it is, but three of something is not one of a kind, which we've done stories about. But each of the bikes has custom built artwork. I like the flat black one, and that's what I included in the picture in this week.
I think that's pretty
awesome. I just like the look of that.
It looks ominous.
Check it out. It's in this week's post, and it's a cool looking bike. And I don't know why it's been around for 2 years, and I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
So, there you go.
Especially, there's a movie connotation in it and stuff.
Right.
You would think I would know about this.
Well, I think it's a legend, not necessarily a movie. I know, Phil, you translate every legend into a movie.
No, it's actually a movie. I've seen the title, 47 Ronin.
Oh, okay.
Somewhere along the lines, I've seen that title. But
you know, before movies comes legends.
I don't know much about legends. Did I ever tell you the time I created my own legend?
Yes, Tonto.
Hey. Right. Oh, wow.
There are legends.
Wow. Okay, Noah.
There you go.
Wow. That was kind of wrong. So
it is wrong, especially when I'm from the Lost Tribe.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yep. You know, before we go into our racing segment and stuff, but before we got a little bit of time before we go to break, we should talk a little bit about the predicted silly season that actually started to happen. It looks like the Lorenzo Ducati that I predicted was a done deal.
I'm excited. Then I won't, you know, after this, I won't be the only person in the pool that doesn't pick Lorenzo ever.
Well, here's my question is, which one of the Andreas has gone? I think it has to be Annone.
You would think, because he's wrecked a couple people in a couple weeks in a row. Especially his teammate. But remember, Danny Pedrosa also wrecked Vicioso L, so apparently it's a sport and all on its own, taking out Andre yeah. Vicioso. But I think over the last season that Andre Iannone has actually been more competitive than Vicioso.
So you're thinking, you're agreeing with Iannone, who thinks it's Vicioso out.
Yeah, and they both are making cases, by the way, why the other one should be out.
I noticed that that's happening, so I'm kind of enjoying it.
It's great.
That.
You know what? It wouldn't surprise me it wouldn't surprise me at all if they're not both gone.
Yeah, I could see Lorenzo Stoner.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see that. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Worth a try.
Yeah, I think Ducati's probably already tried that argument.
Well, they got to try it with his wife. The argument.
In my opinion, if Stoner comes back, it'd be to replace Pedrosa on Honda.
No, because he's got to deal with Ducati.
It doesn't matter.
Wow.
So what? He's got to deal with Ducati. Big deal.
Okay. Yeah. And then the other speculation Honda has
Yamaha. Honda has extremely deep pockets.
Yeah. Well, they're not offering it to their riders.
Well, I understand that. But I'm just saying if they wanted to buy him out of his contract with Ducati, it'd be nothing for Honda to do. That's like pocket
change. Then who takes over the other Yamaha? I mean, I've put out there
Vinales. Well, we already
Vinales.
Know.
It already announced?
I don't think it's official, but it's been rumored for a while that Vinales was going to take over that ride. Now, the question is Vinales the best choice for that ride?
I don't know who's better. You want to go young.
This is what I've heard from several sources.
Okay.
Rossi was pushing really hard for Vinales.
Right. Rossi has a thing for Vinales.
Well, yeah, but Rossi also has a thing for Italian riders and not Spanish riders like
Vinales. Well, can you blame him? I mean, they have been taking him out for 2 years now.
But he's had a problem. That's what I'm saying. So why is he going to be in favor of a Spanish rider?
Oh, yeah,
I would expect him to actually to push a...
But didn't Vinales run for Rossi's team? Wasn't his first ride in Moto3 the Rossi team?
And the VR46 team? In Moto3? No, he was... What's her name's team, was it? That
Paris
wasn't Paris Hilton's team. No, hers wasn't the VR46 team, no.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. I think he's just a fan from watching him and, you know, seeing how he's done. But to me, and would it be funny if one of the Ducati riders goes to Yamaha? Okay, now let's see. Okay,
I don't know if Iannone has that. I could see Dovizioso.
Yeah,
and I think that'd be a good fit because Dovizioso is fast.
Well, and he did well at Honda, not well enough. That's the problem. You know what? If you're on a team with the wrong person,
you know, I kind of would have picked him over Pedrosa when they did that.
Think age will keep one of them from going.
Right.
There.
I mean, you got to go. They want to go young. Yamaha wants to go young,
and Vinales is probably at the oldest. They would probably consider. Right. I would think, and he's what 22.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, like I don't see anybody in Moto2 that I would say. Oh, I want him for sure. Who's young?
Yeah, I mean, I can think of some people, but that's not going to happen. You know,
obviously.
You got to remember, Vinales. You know, Vinales went that. It did that as well. So there's not like there's nobody. Even if you go to Moto2, there's not many people in Moto2 that are younger than Vinales. You know, Vinales was young when he made the jump from Moto3 to Moto2. He was he was like 17 in Moto3, right? Or 18.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, he was barely legal.
But I think that's what Yamaha's looking at. They're looking at they want to have some guy they can build. Because there was a time when, you know, Lorenzo was young.
Yeah, that was a while ago. He also used to finish races and care about where he was in the standings.
That is true.
So maybe they want somebody that they can find that kind of stuff in.
That is true. And, you know, Lorenzo, and I don't hold this against him. I hold a lot of things against him, but I don't hold it against him. I imagine he is probably getting a bucket of gold for going to college.
Every bit of a bucket.
Yeah.
Every bit. So.
Anyway.
Why don't we punch out, go to break.
What should we talk about when we get back?
Why don't we talk about Supercross and World Superbike?
We can talk about that. Can we not talk about the first race in World Superbike?
No, we'll talk about that. And we'll talk a little World Super Sport.
Actually, we could talk World Super Sport today, too, but I have a feeling I know someone who won't listen if we do.
Yeah, I feel bad for that guy.
I feel really bad for that guy, too. God. I feel bad for the whole state of New York right now.
It's killing me.
Yeah,
I'll bet it is. Killing me.
I'll bet it is.
He's fast.
Yeah. Well, and then you're going to have a vote reported tonight, too. That's not going to make New York look any better.
No, we're going to look horrible.
Yep.
I dig that entrance song.
I know you. That's your music, Phil.
That is my music. Yeah. I think I'm going to put it on the CD and just ride around with it.
There you go.
That sounds like me. You know what I'm saying?
When was the last time you played
That's Deep?
That's Deep.
This week. Come on! Yeah. You know what? I know it. Everybody. We're going to have to put that up on the Facebook page.
Has all your friends and family heard that song at least once?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. That's one of the greatest.
We should put
songs.
It up. A lot of people have forgotten it because that's actually something that didn't come from this show. It came from another show called The Men's Club.
Yeah, and that was like one of the greatest songs of all time.
It's epic.
It is really good.
Yeah.
Ken, I guess maybe we should talk some Moto America because you think that's important.
Well, I do. I do. I think I believe that, hey, it's America, man. It's America. We got to support the series even when they're screwing up. I think we have
I agree with that. Yeah. I just have a hard time talking about something I can't watch.
I have a hard time doing it, too, but it wouldn't be the first time that I talked about races just from reading about them. I've done that before, too. So
I was so aggravated that I didn't
like
have the patience.
I will say I enjoyed the last lap of the race because that's all I could see on BN Sports Connect.
You know, that's just such a show.
It sounded like it was probably real good racing to watch, especially I would like to have watched race one because I would enjoyed watching the Yamahas take each other out.
Yeah, and I kind of would have liked to see more of the race other than the only thing I saw on Facebook of any of the racing was Josh Day taking a tumble.
Yeah, yeah, bad one.
Looks like a broken hand, a broken arm, I feel bad for him. Yep. I hope he gets a recovery. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they're going to have any more races this year, but I hope he makes it.
Right. And my understanding is like that Suzuki has actually sent somebody out to off Jake Lewis. That's my hearing. That's what I heard. So poor Jake Lewis. I feel
poor
bad
Jake
for him.
Lewis.
No, actually, that's some news that came out this week. Suzuki, Yoshimura Suzuki is saying they're going to find a way to keep. To keep Tony Elias on the team. They're going to find a way.
They have to.
Whatever that means.
He's what?
Yeah.
Three for four?
Right. So my guess is they probably have a backup bike, even though you're not allowed to have a backup bike, in World Superbike. Yeah. I'm sorry, not World Superbike, in Moto America. That doesn't mean they don't have bikes, so they can scavenge parts from, because God knows it's, a 9-year-old bike anyway.
Right.
So,
they ain't like it's no.
Yeah, so the team captain of the Yoshimura Suzuki team kind of hemmed and hawed, didn't want to actually be clear, but he just let it sort of slip out that they're going to find a way. They're going to find a way to keep Tony Elias in there, and the reason they have to do that is because I don't think I've ever seen anybody come onto a bike that they have never ridden before. In a model they've never ridden before, okay?
Indeed.
In a series they've never ridden before, on tracks they've never ridden before, and win the first three races.
Yeah, that's kind
ever,
of...
Ever, ever. Win the first
it would
race.
It would have been amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Once in a lifetime opportunity, gone.
Well, let's talk about it. Even though we didn't see it.
Well, I was going to say it's probably time to move on to more pressing things because we only got about...
We only talked about one race. Are we that close time-wise?
We're like 14 minutes.
Okay, well, we can wrap this up in 2 minutes. How's that?
Okay.
Okay. I just want to say that he won race one after Josh Hayes took out Cameron Boone.
And I would have loved to have seen that. Nothing would have made me happier than
that. Right, Right. And but in race two,
no, I'm not for people getting injured.
Tony Elias wrecked in race two. Oh, I should also mention in race one, there was a hell of a race between Roger Hayden. Poor Roger Hayden. Roger Hayden and Jake Lewis are probably.
If Tony Elias gets taken out during the season, it will be Roger Hayden's doing.
Right. Oh, right. And Jake Lewis will be helping. Yeah. But in any case, they had a great. They you know, it's got to be very frustrating to Roger Hayden. He did everything he could, and he got close a few times. He could not overtake Elias, you know, in the trailing laps of the race, and Elias wins his third in a row. Rex in the second race, and Bouvier wins. Hayes comes in second, and who do you think comes in third? Do you know?
No.
Mr. Hayden, right about, does this sound like last year at all?
God.
Right.
And he's finally on a bike.
He's like, yeah, Elias gone! Elias gone! Oh, Yamahas. I can't catch the Yamahas. Anyway, so that's Moto America, and I'm going to tell you, Phil, I've experienced before, it's going to get better.
I hope so.
It will.
I do not want to be sitting here at the end of the season still complaining that I can't watch a race.
We will find a way. We will find a way.
I'm not, you know what? I'm giving it one more weekend, and then I'm done. Well,
I'll find a way. I'll get you back. I'll bring you back, Phil, once I find
you. You have to bring me back. It sucks that I'm going to be watching more CEV because former show guest Jason Uribe is racing in it, and it's online on their website, Novel
Well,
Thought.
You know what? I don't want to say I couldn't find it online. Now, if somebody else finds it online, send us an email.
I said that earlier in the show. Yeah, not a joke.
If you find a way, there might be a way to watch it.
And if you got a bike shop or something like that, you'll get free press.
So the BN Sports Connect website is so bad. It's so bad that both Phil and me could not find the races on there. So if they are there somewhere, just clue us in. We're not that, you know, we're slow, okay?
Yeah, I'm dumb. Yeah, I can admit that. Then we had watching Week of Race, we had Supercross.
We had Supercross, and it was like, in my opinion, it was an evil track.
You know, I guess I grew up riding dirt bikes and stuff on much sandier soil than everybody else. Because I didn't.
They've always had sand traps. This sand trap was extremely loose. This sand trap ate 12 people, Phil. Okay.
I get that, but I don't know. I didn't view it as that loose. Now, I've ridden on worse.
Well, you would think.
And I'm not an expert rider.
You would think that somebody from Florida would have had a lot of experience riding on sand.
No, their sand is very different.
Well, you don't know what this sand was.
That's Midwest sand. That's dry.
Maybe they trucked it
soft.
In. But apparently, Malcolm Stewart does not like sand very much because I think he dropped his bike four times in the sand.
Oh, at least.
Yeah,
it was four that they showed us.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? I think he dropped it more than that.
Yeah, I think they said Malcolm went down the sand again. Just take our word for it. We're not going to show that.
Yeah, we don't have time.
Yeah, the spider cam's not following him anymore.
But it did play into Martin's hand, Jeremy Martin's hand.
Oh, I tell you.
Because he likes that loose crap.
He does. He like, you know, he's a motocross guy.
He's a motocross guy.
He's always had problems in Supercross, and he's always excelled in motocross. And he's used to riding in all kinds of crap, and that worked out really well for him. And he pretty much dusted the field off. He took the lead. He took the whole shot. That was good. He was gone. He was gone. He finished, I think, early on Friday.
Yeah, okay, I think he actually time traveled during the race.
Yeah, he was so far ahead.
Plessinger had another good race, and McElrath had a good race. And Plessinger's somebody we've been talking to.
And McElrath had a horrible start, too.
Horrible.
He had a horrible start and worked his way back up through the field. Malcolm Stewart just had Malcolm Stewart had it made. He wrecked early in the race. He made a huge comeback. He was going to maintain the points lead, and he said, I think I'm going to wreck four more times.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to do that. And there were guys up near the front that we don't talk about.
Yeah.
RJ Hampser, Gannon Audette, Anthony Rodriguez, Alexander Fry. That guy got like 12 numbers on his number plate. Where the hell is he even from?
Yeah, right.
I shouldn't say that because he's actually from Huntington, Maryland, which is down by Bud's Creek. Good for you.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize he was a local guy until I just said that and opened my big mouth.
Until you insulted him.
Until I insulted him.
Right.
And I've been to Huntington, Maryland, so I mean, to get out of there is just a hike.
I don't like to ever admit that I've been to Maryland.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame. But, you know, so there, I liked it because there was a lot of guys there who we don't ever talk about.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. And it's like I always said that if if Jeremy Martin ever got down the intricacies of Supercross, he'd be a tough guy to beat because he's just so strong. He's ridiculous on motocross. I mean, he's one of the most naturally talented guys I've seen. Well, both the Martin brothers are.
Yeah, on motocross.
In motocross, but I don't know. He's had a couple good races. So let's move on. Oh, real quick. Ken Roczen, I tell you what, did everything he could, and what he couldn't do was could not beat a guy who didn't make mistakes.
And
Dungey is just like, I think Dungey's a machine. I think, actually, I've decided Dungey is a cyborg.
Yes.
He's been pre-programmed before the races. He goes out there because I don't think you can race that many laps and not make a single mistake.
On a track that bad.
Roczen was on it, and he couldn't run a perfect race.
No.
I mean, nobody can. And not only that, the other thing, too, that I noticed, if you notice in there, Roczen kept taking the outside going around the curves.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was. He lost time every time that he would make it up.
No, because for the last 3 weeks, and I talked about this. I don't remember we talked about it on the air, but right. Brian Downey told me.
Yeah.
He said, "Watch how Dungey holds that outside line, and he holds the speed like a road racer."
But he had the inside line this week,
right? But because the track was so loose,
right?
I think he dug in and braked harder, and then pulled out because you couldn't keep the speed.
Well, he took the inside line, and every time he did, Roczen was far on the outside, and Roczen would lose time. He'd make it up on the whoops. He was way faster on the whoops. Yeah. The problem was,
you couldn't hold the turn at the same speed and not wreck.
Right.
And that's kind of what I think.
Right.
And I think he even said before the race he's been watching videos of Dungey to see where he's faster and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he saw that, and I think what Dungey realized is this ain't the track for that.
Yeah.
Maybe. There are tracks that worked, and there are tracks that don't.
Maybe, and Roczen didn't adjust.
Yeah.
So Dungey won again. Big news.
Big news. Yeah. Pike had a miserable week.
Yep.
Musquin, miserable.
Musquin's been having a bad run lately.
Yeah. You know, other than that, I'd say it's same old Jason Anderson did good again. Mm-hmm. Bogle was up there. Tomac. I thought Tomac being on the Kawasaki this year was going to be a great move for him.
Doesn't appear to be.
Does not appear to be.
Not for him, at least.
You know, I mean, I never thought I'd say that the guy in the Kawasaki doesn't fit the bike.
Yeah.
Apparently, that's true in this case.
It happens.
And then we got to get to World Superbike before we run out of time.
Right.
Because we only got about 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We should talk a little World Supersport.
Yeah, we can.
There's a reason we don't talk World Supersport in the pool, because what happens when I pick Americans?
Yeah.
They don't do well.
No.
PJ Jacobson had fought to get the lead twice in miserable conditions.
Yep.
And tossed it both times.
Yep.
I was fist pumping, throwing things in my house, and it ain't big. And it can't take a lot of things hitting the wall. When he wrecked, but it was the red flag, and he fixed the bike, and he got back out there.
Right.
And then he dropped back, and I said, okay, safe race. He just wrecked.
I don't think he met the rule about getting the bike back to the pit.
You know,
in
the
five
green
minutes.
Flag was still flying and the guy there.
Yeah.
At the end of pit lane.
Yeah, I remember that. The guy did they let him get out of the
they
pit.
They let him get out.
They let him get out of
probably
the pit.
Probably because they didn't want a second American Revolution. But then he got out there, and he was running fifth. Then he started building up his confidence.
He was proving the adage that we use all the time. You're always fastest just before you wreck.
Two laps to go.
Two laps to go.
Oh.
Which goes right along with the prior race, which he was last lap, right?
Right. He's just having bad luck, but he's fast.
Yep.
And he looks good. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't look sad about, you know, he doesn't look hesitant about challenging Sofoglu.
No, it doesn't. And Sofoglu's not as dominating. Kluzel's not having the greatest time
this
season. But
this is
his
time to shine.
You don't win races on your backside.
No, you don't.
Right.
And he was saying he was getting a lot of advice from Nicky Hayden, which I'm glad Hayden has stepped up and kind of mentored him.
Mm, that's interesting. I'm not sure. Most of what Nicky Hayden would have to tell you would be useful information in 2006 and 2007.
Normally I'm the Nicky Hayden hater. Right,
well, let's talk about Nicky Hayden, because Nick Hayden actually got a podium this
week. Right, I was going to say, you're hating on a guy that got on the podium.
Well, that's his first podium in World Superbike, and I think that's real good and everything, but, you know, PJ Jacobs has been doing pretty good without any advice, right?
Yeah, but he's been crashing a lot with advice.
It's exactly.
All right, I see your point.
Okay.
Maybe he shouldn't be listening.
Right.
So we get to World Superbike, and we should talk about the track conditions. I mean, monsoon during the World Supersport race.
During the Supersport race, monsoon. I've never seen a track that could dry that fast, though.
No, that was like crazy.
Freaky. It's like freaky. They say when it's windy, it dries really fast, but it wasn't. They said the winds were pretty still, and the track still dried after about like five or six laps.
Yeah, where they started on wets.
Yeah.
And then they started coming into change.
Yep. And Tom, and Tom Sykes would have won that race if he had come in a lap earlier when he was supposed to. He came in following Jonathan Rea, which is a mistake.
Right.
Okay. If he come in the lap before, he would have been out on slicks a lap earlier than everybody else. He wouldn't have had to push as hard as he had to following Rea. And ultimately, that's what caused him to screw up, and he wrecked. And it was totally his screw up. And his teammate was more than glad to put that out after the race.
Yeah.
And basically say that Tom Sykes can't handle getting passed. He actually said that. Got picked up on a mic.
That's gonna be fisticuffs.
I think so. I think before the season's over with, one of the two of them will wreck the other one.
They're gonna A&O-ney each other. Yeah. I'm not gonna call it a wreck. It's an A&O-ney.
Or a Rossi.
But that did get no Rossi. Rossi just got tired of Marquez hitting him.
Right.
But Chess Davey ended up on the podium, and then Nicky Hayden out of nowhere's got his podium.
Yeah, well, I know how out of nowhere. Everybody in front of him wrecked.
What I mean. Out of nowhere, like everybody else was vanishing.
Right. Right.
And he was the last survivor. And you know, many road racers will tell you. Many races in general, the most important part about a race is finishing.
Well, you know what the second most important part is? Have the entire front row go out.
Yeah, well, that helps.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you grab three positions instantly.
That helps. It never hurts to be lucky.
Right.
So, you know, Hayden got a good run there.
And he looked good out there.
He did.
He looked good out there. He did what he was supposed to do. PJ wrecked twice, so.
Yeah, he was like, all the Americans that are going to wreck this week wrecked.
That's right.
And then race two, Rea just, again, looked like Rea.
Rea looked unbeatable in the second. In the second race. Sykes ran hard in the second race. He looked good in the second race, but you know what? I don't know if there's anything he can do. If I was him, I'd be like, get me out of the series. I can't race on the same bike as Jonathan Rea. I picked Sykes to double, and I'm just glad he got a second in the second race because I got 0 points in the first race. And at this point, I don't know that I can pick him going forward.
That was the rain race was the second race. The first race, he just wiped on his own, remember?
Yeah, the first race, it was still wet. It was still wet. The track was still wet when they went out in race one. Right. And it dried, and they switched to the slicks. That was race one. And he should have pitted and put the slicks on our lap earlier. Race two was dry. Race two was all dry.
You're right.
And there was just nothing that he could do about Rea. I mean, he's just too strong. And Tom Sykes is one of the strongest breakers in the field. And I don't know what he does
I don't know how Rea is so much faster and keeps
He gets tired. On the throttle faster than anybody else out of the curves, and that usually is bad news. If you misjudge that, you wreck.
Right.
You're going to high side if you get on the throttle too soon. He's able to figure it out just right, and he's consistent. That's the thing about Jonathan Rea. He's consistent. You can't make mistakes racing him, and unfortunately, he did.
And how about Vandermark with his comments about, I know little secrets to pick up speed here.
Well, he said in the third sector, he had some tricks in the third sector that he was going to do, and, you know, I don't know what you say about that.
Yeah.
I mean, he did look strong.
He did look strong, and Josh Brooks looked strong in the rain.
He did. He did look, Josh, yeah. That's because he's from Soggy Breton.
Well, they also raced there. BSB races at Assen. Yeah,
okay.
So he's got a little bit of track experience.
Right.
And, yes, he is from Soggy Breton.
Yeah.
So anyway. But, yeah, it was good racing. This weekend coming up, we got MotoGP and Jerez. Hurrah.
And fortunately, we didn't have time to talk about the pool, so let's move on. See you, folks.
I don't even want to talk about
the pool. I'll see you folks next week.